Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. This is Section A. The headline reads, Midland Memorial Hospital, Higher COVID Census Forces Visitor Restrictions, by Stuart Doreen. The worsening conditions related to coronavirus across the West Texas region are forcing Midland health officials to put tougher restrictions back into place at Midland Memorial Hospital. Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Tuesday that because of the surge and the dramatic increase in disease in the community and the risks that runs to everyone here, we're going to reduce our visitation back to the more restrictive terms that we had in place for most of the time we've been in the pandemic. The changes go into place this morning, Myers said. The restrictions include one visitor at a time for a pediatric patient, and parents can switch out. Two visitors for laboring mothers, a support person, and a doula if they choose to have one. One visitor for patients who need someone to speak for them. Visitors for those who are at the end of life. Otherwise, the rest of the inpatient population will not be allowed visitors beginning today and for the foreseeable future, Meyer said. We'll reevaluate the policy on a regular basis. The news was part of a weekly press conference at which Myers described metrics that showed coronavirus spiking in Midland County and across the region. These metrics include the number of people being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital's testing facilities has risen from the 600s to 785 last week. The percentage of people testing positive has risen from 11.5% 3 weeks ago to 13.5% 2 weeks ago and to 16% last week. Last week, new coronavirus cases jumped to 268, rising for the fourth time in 5 weeks. On both Monday and Tuesday, the Midland Health Department reported more than 100 cases from testing that took place during the weekend and on Monday. Myers said the hospital census is up to 206 total patients, a number he described as very high. There currently are about 245 total beds, he said. The current hospital census includes the 47 COVID-19 patients, 19 of those in critical care. Myers also said, of the 20 patients in the hospital on ventilators, 15 are COVID patients. That's as big a number of ventilator patients as we've seen in a while, Myers said. He said the out-of-county patients are factoring into the high COVID census. He said 10 of the 19 in critical care are from outside the county, as are 15 of the 28 in the COVID ward. Myers said the hospital is beginning to deny many of the transfers now. However, he isn't worried about the high number of COVID patients in El Paso, Amarillo, Lubbock, and southeastern New Mexico. He said the slow and steady climb of COVID patients inside Midland County could impact Midland Memorial in the next couple of weeks, as some of those testing positive get sick and end up needing treatment at MMH. We really don't see an end in sight immediately to this growth in the hospitalized patient population, Myers said. Myers also said the COVID occupancy, compared to total available beds in the region, is around 7.4%, about half the rate that would force the state to enforce community-wide restrictions on the number of people allowed in restaurants, businesses, and bars. He also said contractors are close to finishing out the ninth floor of the hospital, which will be for non-CCU COVID patients. This is our reality as long as the society is open and active until vaccines and effective treatments are in place, Myers said. So we can be facing very high volumes for several months in the future. I think we all need to act accordingly. Wear your mask, wash your hands, stay out of crowds, stay home if you can. Default to more risk-averse behaviors here in the short run while we are peaking in the community. And stay safe. This article is entitled MISD, Board OKs New Lease for Ranchland Golf Course, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland ISD Board approved a lease agreement with the operators of Ranchland Hills Golf Club on Monday that will require monthly payments of $10,000. The two-year agreement also requires Ranchland Golf Partners, LLC, to pay a 15% lease from net operating income to Midland ISD, less the $120,000 guaranteed monthly payments previously paid. Last year, Midland ISD bought the 116.89 acres in East Midland as a site for a high school. The district then allowed the golf club to operate for $1 annually until November 2020. Board President Rick Davis stated in an email Tuesday that the district, quote, could not obtain all those terms when negotiating for the purchase of the property with the then owner who was actively marketing the property for sale. However, now as the owner of the property, we were in a position to negotiate more favorable lease terms, unquote. Those terms include also that Ranchland Golf Partners maintain the lease premises in good and safe conditions at its own expense. Ranchland Golf Partners pay all utilities on the property. Midland ISD high school golf teams will be granted course access during the golf season at no charge to the individual or teams. Tall City Invitation student golfers using the course will be charged at a rate of $20 a player. Midland ISD Education Foundation golf participants using the course will be charged at a rate of $55 a golfer, including cart use. Ranchland Golf Partners waive all facility fees for banquet or event fees for all MISD clubs, foundations, and associated educational programs. Ranchland Golf Partners will be responsible for all golf course and facility maintenance. It was stated during Monday's meeting that Midland ISD will continue to pay the property tax bill for the property. District officials stated that despite the property being owned by the school district, property taxes must be paid because the property is not being used for educational purposes. The Midland Central Appraisal District listed $25,507 as an estimated property tax for 1600 East Wadley Avenue, covering the property, golf shop inventory, and furniture, fixtures, machinery, equipment, and computers. This article is entitled Energy: Pioneer to Buy Parsley for $4.5 billion in stock. Deal involves father and son, Scott and Brian Sheffield. By Kevin Crowley and David Wethey, Bloomberg. Pioneer Natural Resources Company agreed to buy Permian Basin peer Parsley Energy Inc. for $4.5 billion in stock, the latest in a flurry of mergers that's quickly reshaping the beleaguered U.S. shale oil industry. Pioneer said Tuesday in a statement the transaction represents a 7.9% deal premium for Parsley holders based on closing prices from a day earlier, just before talks between the companies were first reported. The deal will lead to $325 million in cost cuts and add to earnings in its first year, the Irving-based company said. The sector is in full-on merger mode, with more than $30 billion of transactions announced or completed in the past few weeks. ConocoPhillips announced Monday its $9.7 billion takeover of Midland-based Concho Resources, Inc., while earlier this month, Chevron Corporation completed its takeover of Noble Energy, Inc. A plunge in oil prices to around $40 a barrel because of the COVID-19 pandemic is putting pressure on energy companies all around the world, particularly in the U.S., where many debt-laden shale operators are losing money. Investors have increasingly lost patience with the sector, and some have called for consolidation to reduce costs and borrowing. The inevitable consolidation in the Permian marches on, Will Van Lowe Jr., a Parsley director and chief executive officer of Quantum Energy Partners, the largest investor in the company, said in a statement. A Pioneer-Parsley combination creates one of the largest players in the prolific Permian Basin of West Texas and New Mexico, which produces more oil output than every OPEC member except Saudi Arabia. The newly enlarged Pioneer's production in the shale formation would grow by more than 40% to the equivalent of roughly 558,000 barrels of oil a day, according to regulatory filings and data from energy analysis firm Enverus, compiled by Bloomberg. Rivaling only Occidental Petroleum Corporation and Chevron Corporation. Shares of Parsley fell 2.1% to $10.38 at 4:29 p.m. in New York after the close of regular trading, while Pioneer dropped 0.6% to $83. Initial reports of the deal talks between Pioneer and Parsley raised eyebrows among some onlookers because Pioneer Chief Executive Officer Scott Sheffield is the father of Parsley Chairman Brian Sheffield. The Sheffields have more of their wealth tied up in Parsley than they do in Pioneer, data compiled by Bloomberg show. Brian is Parsley's 11th largest shareholder with a 2.7% stake value at about $105 million. Scott's stake in Pioneer is worth about $51 million. The deal already appears to have strong support from two of Parsley's top shareholders. Brian Sheffield's stake in Parsley is amplified by his holdings of Class B shares, which give him overall voting power of 7.8%. Quantum Energy Partners holds an additional 17% of the stock and said it supports the deal. The Sheffields' history as Texan Wildcatters spans several generations and multiple cycles of boom and bust. Pioneer's origins go back to the business run by Scott's father-in-law, Joe Parsley. Scott, 68, is a veteran oil executive who first took the top job at Pioneer predecessor Parker and Parsley in 1985. Brian, 42, became a billionaire at the time of Parsley Energy's $214,000 initial public offering, months before the oil price crashed from $100 a barrel levels. The family's connection probably means that any potential transaction would need to clear an incremental layer of scrutiny from each company's board of directors before reaching the finish line, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company analyst Aaron Jayaram wrote in a note. The U.S. shale industry has been a lightning rod for accusations of poor corporate governance over the last few years. Executives have raked in millions of dollars in pay, bonuses, and stock awards while stock performance languished, and in some cases, their companies went bankrupt. There are some investigators who worry this could be an outrageous conflict of interest, and there are others who really believe if the deal's in everyone's interest, then it's fine, said Paul Sankey, a New York-based analyst at Sankey Research. Parsley executives would share $13.8 million in stock payments for a change of control filing show, with CEO Matt Gallagher, a former Pioneer employee, receiving $5.6 million. Gallagher would also be entitled to $7.8 million if he was ousted from the merged entity. Brian Sheffield, who retired last year as CEO, was removed from the list of Parsley executives entitled to payouts resulting from a merger or acquisition earlier this year. Scott Gruber, an analyst at Citigroup Inc., said the family connections between the companies may help them decide on one of the toughest aspects of deal negotiations, who ends up with the most senior roles. We think the social elements of a potential tie-up may be more straightforward to navigate, he wrote in a note. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled DPS, Midland Man Dies in One Vehicle Wreck, from Staff Reports. An 18-year-old Midland man died in a one-vehicle wreck Monday morning on Farm to Market Road 1213, according to a press release from the Texas Department of Public Safety. Gabriel E. Aguirre was driving a Chevrolet Camaro eastbound on FM 1213. The vehicle left the roadway, hit a fence, and rolled, according to the release. Aguirre died at the scene. He was not wearing a seatbelt, according to the release. The wreck occurred at about 5:30 a.m. Monday, 5 miles south of Midland. Aguirre is the 20th person to die on roads in Midland County this year and the second this month, according to Reporter Telegram records. A 40-year-old Midland man died early October 13th in a one-vehicle crash on Loop 250, according to a previous article. This article is entitled MISD, Lehigh School Will Keep Its Name Through 2020-21 School Year, by Stuart Doreen. Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon said during the Midland ISD board meeting on Monday that Robert E. Lee High School will keep that name for the remainder of the 2020-21 academic year. During a special meeting last week, the board voted to change the name of Lee High School and the freshman high school to Legacy High School. Dixon said Legacy High School will open at the beginning of the 2021-22 school year. She said the district will address issues as they arise and bigger items will come before the board. One reason for the decision to delay changing the name was that senior rings had been engraved and a lot of work had been done on yearbooks. First rating. Chief Financial Officer Daryl Dodds went over the district's perfect first rating. FIRST, Financial Integrity Rating System of Texas, provides transparency to the public concerning future solvency of a district. According to the district, and Midland earned a score of 100 out of 100 for an A or superior rating. Reentry. MISD Chief of Staff Katie Atkins reminded the board that Phase 5 of reentry will begin on November 9th. During Phase 5, every campus will be open to students 5 days a week. This article is entitled MISD, Cases in October Rise to 70, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD reported another 36 coronavirus cases from October 10th to 15th. The district, on its website, reported the number of cases rose to 70 this month, and there have been 185 cases, employees or students, since June 22nd. There were 63 in September. Those new cases included 8 at Lee High School, 4 at Lee Freshman, 3 at Milam Elementary, 3 at Santa Rita Elementary, and 2 each at Midland High, Alamo Junior High, San Jacinto Junior High, and Carver Center. The rise in the number of cases was discussed by the MISD board at its meeting Monday night. Members talked about everything from coronavirus protocol to how many days a student or teacher misses after being in contact with someone with COVID-19 to the effectiveness of the district's online academy. When talking about losing students for up to 24 days because of coronavirus, one board member said, "It's going to get worse, not better." It was mentioned that coronavirus cases are rising across the county and flu season also is coming. "We can't be effective if 20% of students aren't there," he said. Midland ISD has said that each notification triggers a series of steps, which include sanitizing and disinfecting, notification of individuals in close proximity, and notification to the health department. Anytime we become aware of an individual with a confirmed case who is present at a public gathering, such as a board meeting or a sporting event, we will also issue a press release. The district also reported there weren't any school closures in September, and so far, none in October.
Hello, this is Michael reading an additional article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for October 21st. Ellen Noel Art Museum seeks submissions of wedding dress portraits, by J.C. Lewis. Ellen Noel Art Museum curator Daniel Zeiss is seeking submissions to complete an exhibit set to open in December. Betrothed, 250 Years of Wedding Fashion from the Stephen Porterfield Collection will be on display starting December 3rd. Zeiss is asking members of the community to lend family wedding portraits for the exhibit. The exhibit draws on the extensive collection of Porterfield, a clothing expert and historian, and will showcase the fashion trends of the past two centuries. To be considered for the exhibit, email a digital photo, a short history, and dimensions of the frame to Zeiss at curator@noelartmuseum.org before November 1st. The final photos will be chosen by Porterfield. Photos that are selected must be framed and ready to hang. The exhibit is limited to 40 portraits. Comic Book Workshop. ENAM is having a comic book illustration workshop 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. Saturday. Odessa artist Mike Kennedy will teach participants to create their own superhero and draw in a comic book illustration style. The workshop is for those 16 and older. Advance registration is $25. Face masks are required. For more information, visit noelartmuseum.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, October 21, 2020. I will survive. Annie Jackson, cancer survivor, shares her story Saturday morning at the 2020 Pink the Park at the Scarborough Sports Complex. Read more about Breast Cancer Awareness Month, including a survivor story, in the Health and Wellness section on 1B. Early voting continues. Early voting for the November 3 general election continues through October 30 at 5 voting centers across Midland. County Annex, 2110 North A Street, through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Sunday, 1 to 6 p.m. Calvary Assembly of God, 908 Johnston Street, MCPL Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop 250 North. Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3818 North Midland Drive, St. Paul's Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason Drive, through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Sunday, 1 to 6 p.m. Early voting totals, Monday, 3,509, Tuesday, 3,612, October 13, 3,259, October 14, 3,330, October 15, 3,399, October 16, 3,780, mail-in ballots, 2,668, total, 23,557. LAD to host virtual town hall. City Council member Jack LAD is planning to host a virtual town hall 7 p.m. today for his District 3 constituents. LAD will provide an update on road work in District 3, parks, and recycling. He will also answer questions. To attend, go to facebook.com/LAD for Midland. Gem and Mineral Society plans market. The Midland Gem and Mineral Society will hold an outdoor market 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. November 7 on the grounds of the Society's facilities, 602 South Main Street. Because of COVID-19, the annual event is being limited to just local vendors, who will have gems, jewelry, and geodes for sale. Society members may also demonstrate lapidary arts and wire wrapping skills. Vendor booths will be socially distanced, and there will not be public restrooms available. Attendees will be required to wear face masks. FBCU raising funds for High Sky. First Basin Credit Union is hosting a donation drive to benefit High Sky Children's Ranch. Funds donated by First Basin and members of the public will be used to purchase Christmas gifts for High Sky youth, according to a press release from the credit union. Donations will be accepted through November 13 at FBCU, 3316 North Midland Drive. MCPL needs volunteers for festival. The select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit www.mssconnections.org. Midland County Public Library needs help with Fall Festival 2020, planned for Saturday at the downtown branch. The festival is a drive-through trunk-or-treat event. Volunteers are needed to help with setting up or tearing down decorations, passing out candy and treats, counting visitors, and directing traffic flow. Call the library at 688-4325. Midland Storytelling Festival needs volunteers for their student storytelling workshop, planned for October 27. The volunteers will listen on Zoom who are participating in the storytelling workshop. Contact Carol James at 413-4355. Permian Basin Petroleum Museum is looking for volunteers for the Fall 2020 Building Bots Robotics and Engineering Fun Lab for kindergartners through 6th graders. Sessions are 5 to 8 p.m. on multiple days. Call the museum at 683-4403. Today in History. Today's Wednesday, October 21, the 295th day of 2020. There are 71 days left in the year. On this date, in 1960, Democrat John F. Kennedy and Republican Richard M. Nixon clashed in their fourth and final presidential debate in New York.
This is the obituary column. Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. Cynthia Martinez. Cynthia Martinez, 30, passed away on Sunday, October 18th in Big Spring, Texas. Visitation will be held Wednesday, October 21st from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held Thursday, October 22nd at 10 a.m. at Holy Trinity Catholic Parish in Big Spring. Interment will follow at Mount Olive Cemetery. Cynthia was born to Joe and the late Janie Martinez on October 4th, 1990. Cynthia is preceded in death by her mother, Janie Martinez. Survivors include her father and stepmother, Joe and Yvette Martinez of Big Spring, two sisters, Jennifer Calvin Bender of Florida, Donna Joe Gus Martinez of Big Spring, aunts, uncles, and numerous nieces and nephews. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home. Francisca Urias Ramirez. Francisca Urias Ramirez went to be with the Lord Jesus on Sunday, October 18th, 2020, at the age of 75. She was known by all as Frances, Mom, or Grandma. Frances was born to Jose C. Urias and Guadalupe H. Urias on October 4th, 1945. She was born in Fort Stockton, Texas. Frances is survived by her beloved husband, Ramon Rubio Ramirez, and their five children, Norma Hernandez, spouse Victor Hernandez, Becky Brown, Ray Ramirez, Richard Ramirez, spouse Terry Ramirez, Joshua Ramirez. She is survived by her dear sisters, Esperanza Gonzalez, Juanita Castro, Lydia Marquez, Amparo Granado, and Ava Gonzalez. She is survived by grandchildren, Michael Roca, Sarah Coronado, Veronica Hernandez, Jonathan Wilkes, Ashley Brown, Clint Brown, Paul Vaez, Victor Ramirez, Rebecca Ramirez, Melanie Ramirez, Andrew Ramirez, and Noah Ramirez. She is also survived by great-grandchildren, nieces, nephews, in-laws, and friends. Frances is preceded in death by her son, David Ramirez, grandchild, David Matthew Ramirez, great-grandchild, Jaylee Addison Wilkes. Her loving parents, Jose C. Urias and Guadalupe H. Urias, sisters Lucy Urias and Josefa Pepa Salas, and brothers Blanco Urias and Alfredo Urias. Funeral services for Frances will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Public viewing will be from 2 to 9 p.m. Tuesday, October 20th, with an evening memorial meeting at 7 p.m. Funeral service will be Wednesday, October 21st, at 2 p.m. at the chapel. A private burial service will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens Cemetery for the family. Gloria Jean Roberts McGavran. Gloria Jean Roberts McGavran, age 74, passed away October 6, 2020. Gloria was born on December 9, 1945, to Charles and Alda Roberts in Kennedy, Texas. Gloria was preceded in death by her father, Charles Roberts, mother, Alda Roberts, sister, Billy Ann Berger, and niece, Carrie Berger. She is survived by her husband, William L. McGavran III, daughters, Catherine McGavran Whiting and husband, Gregory W. Whiting, Melissa McGavran May and husband, Carl H. May, grandchildren, Lucas G. Whiting and Elizabeth A. Whiting, nephew, Jason Berger, and niece, Amy Berger Maroney. A memorial service will be held at Ramsey Funeral Home, 5600 Williams Drive, Georgetown, Texas, on 24th of October at 10 a.m. A reception will follow at the reception room of Ramsey Funeral Home. Those unable to attend may view the service at www.ramseyfuneral.com/page/web-casting. And then by clicking on Ramsey Funeral Home webcasting near the center of the screen. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that remembrances be sent to local hospices, churches, or food banks in Gloria's name. You may share a message and memory on our online guestbook at www.ramseyfuneral.com. Josephine R. Martinez. Josephine R. Martinez, 75, of Odessa, passed away on Sunday, October 18th in Odessa, Texas. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, October 22nd at Willowbrook Funeral Home Chapel, with Pastor Tonita De Luna officiating. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Park in Midland. Josephine R. Martinez was born in La Mesa to Joseph and Enriqueta Lucio Ramirez on July 23, 1945. She is preceded in death by her parents, Jose and Enriqueta Lucio Martinez, sister Maria de Rosario, nephew Arnold Martinez, and by her husband. Josephine is survived by son Leroy and his family Letty, Gabby, Chris, Gia, and Christian Rodriguez, daughters Olga Rodriguez, Gracie Martinez and her family, Valencia, Logan and Sebastian Ibarra, son Justin Chito Turner, daughter Sandy Lujan, and many nieces and nephews. Services entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Juan Johnny Madrid. Juan Johnny Madrid, 62, passed away Sunday, July 12, 2020, in San Antonio, Texas. Funeral Mass is set for October 23rd at 10 a.m. at the Grotto of Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. He is survived by three children, Chrissy, Justin, Jonathan, and three grandchildren, Elijah, Michaela, and Matthias, and siblings Elisardo, Adrian, Jane, Ernest, and Sylvia, and nephews Leon, Max, Victor, and Rick, and niece Jade. He is preceded in death by parents Juan and Ruth Madrid, and their nephew, Christopher Petralva. Lisa Marie Jensen Driver. Lisa Marie Jensen Driver, 52, of Midland, Texas, passed away Friday, October 16th in Lubbock, Texas. Lisa was born July 27, 1968, to Paul and Barbara Jensen in Odessa, Texas. Those left to cherish her memories are her husband Gerald of Midland, Texas, her son Kyle of Fort Worth, Texas, her parents Paul and Barbara Jensen of Odessa, brother David Jensen and wife Mary of Odessa, brother Richard Jensen and wife Helen of Odessa, sister Dana Mannion and husband Mark of Eugene, Oregon, sister Jean Ann Mauck and husband Chris of Birmingham, Alabama, as well as numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. Visitation will be held at Frank Wilson Funeral Home in Odessa on Wednesday, October 21st from 6 to 8 p.m. Memorial services will be held at Sovereign Grace Church in Midland on Thursday, October 22nd at 2 p.m., with graveside services to follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Robert Bob Hans Jensen. Robert Bob Hans Jensen passed away on October 14, 2020. Bob was born December 20, 1935. Bob had four brothers and five sisters. He was raised in Knox City, Texas, and graduated a proud Greyhound. He then went on to Texas Tech University on a football scholarship. In 1955, while in Lubbock at Texas Tech, he met the love of his life, Arletta Black. They fell in love and were married on December 29, 1955, in Anton, Texas. Bob lost Arletta in 2004 to ALS. He then moved to Midland in 2010. Bob leaves behind a sister-in-law, Jimmy Jensen, daughter Sandy Hill and her husband Mark, daughter Delise Henry Grovo and her husband Sean, several grandchildren, and four great-grandchildren. Bob was an active uncle to his 19 nieces and nephews and many great and great-grandnieces and nephews. Donation in Bob's memory can be made to Midland Children's Rehab in honor of Grant Robert Mata. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Dorothy Laverne Jackson. Funeral services for Dorothy Laverne Jackson, 61, of Midland, are pending at Jackie Warren Funeral Home. Dorothy Laverne Jackson died October 17th at a local hospital. Drusillar Houston. Drusillar Houston, age 98, of Midland, passed away on October 19th. She is survived by her children, Gloria Aldridge, Shirley Burgess, Audrey Taylor, Jimmy Reed, and Albert Reed, all of Midland. Viewing will be held Wednesday, October 21st from 6 to 8 p.m. and Thursday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held Friday, October 23rd at Goodwill Baptist Church at 1 p.m. Interment will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Services are in the care of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home and Chapel. Gabriel Enrique Aguirre. Gabriel Enrique Aguirre, 18, of Midland, passed away on Monday, October 19th. Viewing will be at Heavenly Gates, 405 North Terrell Street, on Wednesday, October 21st, from 10:30 a.m. to 9 p.m., with rosary starting at 7 p.m. Wednesday evening, funeral mass is set for Thursday, October 22nd, at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his parents, Danny and Maria Aguirre, one brother, John Michael Aguirre, one sister, Alyssa Lynn Aguirre, grandparents, Enrique and Mary Aguirre, and Edelmira Sanchez, one nephew. Helen R. Collier. Helen R. Collier, age 98, of Midland, passed away on October 17th. She is survived by her daughter, Gloria Robinson, of Midland, as well as many grandchildren. A viewing will be held on Thursday, October 22nd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral services will be Friday, October 23rd, at the Lee Street Church of Christ at 10 a.m., with burial immediately following at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Jim R. Buddy Redden, Jr. Jim R. Buddy Redden passed away on October 19th. Services will be at a later date. He is survived by his wife Dottie and son Tom of Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Neely B. Polk. Funeral services for Neely B. Polk, 79, of Midland, are pending at Jackie Warren Funeral Home. Neely B. Polk died October 13th in Odessa at Odessa Medical Center Hospital. Teddy Paul Cannon. Teddy Paul Cannon, 73, of Odessa, passed away on October 13th at his home in Odessa. Teddy was born on May 11th, 1947, to Paul and Letty Jean Trulock Cannon in Paducah, Texas. Teddy was a Vietnam veteran of the United States Army. He is survived by his daughter, Letitia K. Cannon, of Sarita, Santa Fe, New Mexico, three grandchildren and one great-grandchild, and two siblings. Funeral services will be Thursday, October 22nd at 11 a.m. in the American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory, with Brother Chris Hager officiating. This is the opinion page. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Conoco Concho Deal Could Mean Loss of Philanthropic Dollars by Stuart Doreen. There are many questions being asked since it was announced this week that ConocoPhillips is acquiring Concho Resources. One of the first that came to my mind is the impact on philanthropy in our community. It has been written here before that when it comes to acquisitions, philanthropy in Midland stands to lose because money slotted for nonprofits rarely lives up to what it was where there are two companies involved. With Concho Resources, it is easy for some to believe that loss in philanthropy could be even worse. Mark Palmer of the Abel Hanger Foundation wasn't ready to talk about his expectations moving forward, but did say Concho, quote, set the gold standard for corporate philanthropy in Midland, unquote. You see, Concho was Midland-based, and company officials knew what it meant to see their neighbors at the store, church, or athletic complex. They knew the pride Midland took in its community college, so partnering with Midland College and Texas A&M University on an engineering academy made so much sense. Their employees have kids who swam at City of Midland Aquatics, so donating for the scoreboard timing facility was a no-brainer. Concho has been all in when it came to a better downtown region and a partner with local entities such as Midland Community Theater. Their officials knew what it meant to make a community better. Midland Community Theater sincerely appreciates the financial support that Concho has provided to our community theater and many other nonprofits in the Permian Basin, said Tim Jebson, MCT's executive director. MCT certainly hopes that Conoco will continue to support the local area, but we remain concerned that decisions made in Houston are less likely to include support of Midland than those made by local business leaders. There is reason to worry. ConocoPhillips doesn't have that reputation, not in Midland. Could that change? Possibly. Carmen Bryant told the Reporter Telegram there is a company not based in Midland that is, quote, doing philanthropy right. It's hard to find a person more connected into the local nonprofit scene than Bryant. Yes, local oil companies being bought out will absolutely have an impact on our nonprofits, Bryant said. However, Chevron is a shining example of the majors doing philanthropy right. From a local point person to employee volunteers, they understand the importance of finding solutions to community needs. Helping the people of the Permian Basin, in turn, ultimately benefits them. In an editorial last year, this newspaper asked, what would a period of megadeals mean to philanthropy, support for taxing entities, and community building? We worried about megadeals between global companies and our independents. Big companies' engagement in a community may be determined by an equation designed in a corporate office hundreds of miles away from the Permian, we wrote. We hope that when the ultra-majors are finished maneuvering, they remember they are an even greater part of this community. We hope company officials adjust their formulas for giving and community impact dollars. Dollars donated to improve education aren't philanthropic. They are operational. Better schools will make Midland a community your employees want to be part of. Participation in community building efforts will improve and then maintain the service and culture we want in Midland. ConocoPhillips, congratulations appear in order for a deal well done. Our hope is there are dollars left over to show your deal wasn't just good for shareholders, but for our community as well. This column is entitled, Another Stimulus Package is Inevitable, by Henry Olson, special to Washington Post. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Democrat, California, and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin are reportedly locked in talks about another round of pandemic-related economic relief. The economy's continuing weakness means that another stimulus bill is inevitable, whether it arrives before or after the election. That means it's crucial for policymakers of both parties to understand the uniqueness of this recession and how that means a relief package must be crafted differently from traditional models if it is to have the most impact. Most recessions occur either because of a lack of consumer demand due to the business cycle or a shock to the financial system. Lack of consumer demand is normally combated through injections of money into the economy, largely through programs such as unemployment benefits that give hard-hit people public money to replace the private money they have lost. A shock to the financial system is often combated with direct injections of public money to financial institutions to ensure they remain stable and active. Recessions, such as the Great Recession of 2008, can involve both causes and require both sets of solutions, as the Obama administration and the Federal Reserve did to combat the downturn. This recession is different because the cause of the problem is neither due to the business cycle nor to an unexpected exogenous shock to the financial system. The pandemic, it said, caused an induced coma throughout the developed world. Much of the developed world, as governments imposed mandatory lockdowns or social distancing measures to combat the novel coronavirus's spread. That artificially suppressed consumer demand and shocked the financial system. But in a predictable manner, their policymakers could foresee. That was why the initial pandemic relief measures doled out cash to virtually every household in the form of the $1,200 per person rebates, loans to businesses, and more accessible cash for financial institutions. These measures cushioned the blow from the initial repression of normal economic activity and provided the necessary money for it to resume quickly once the lockdowns were removed. The problem now is that segments of the economy are under continual stress because the virus is not under control. Employment is nearly back to normal in many sectors of the economy, such as manufacturing and the financial and information industries, but it remains at depression levels in three types of economic sectors: those facing capacity controls, such as restaurants and indoor entertainment, those that remain closed under government order, such as education, and those impacted by the public fear of mingling closely in tight indoor spaces, such as transportation, office support services, and accommodations. Those industries will remain in duress because of public fear, government orders, or both, regardless of how much cash is flowing to people or institutions. Economic relief measures, then, should be crafted to meet this problem rather than the more traditional ones policymakers are used to combating. That means less focus on traditional stabilization, such as extended unemployment benefits, and more focus on the ongoing support for industries as a whole. This doesn't mean that we should give up traditional stimulus measures. People without work must still be supported during this crisis, but it's unlikely such people will be able to get back to work at all until the crises enveloping these economic segments abate. It's not good enough to keep laid-off waiters and cooks out of poverty if the restaurants that would have employed them go out of business. A national relief measure also needs to incorporate a national strategy for living with the novel coronavirus. Without it, states and cities can impose their own stringent lockdowns, knowing they will be bailed out by the federal government. That tilts incentives towards suppressing economic activity without any consideration for the economic health of the whole country, or even without any clear sense of whether the measures adopted will have a measurable effect at keeping the virus at bay. A rational relief measure would institute clear, objective standards regarding the virus's spread that states would have to meet before expanded relief measures are provided. Talks may produce a relief bill this week, the headline cost in the trillions of dollars. But without a clear sense of the true nature of the crisis, that will be just another finger in the dike, temporarily holding back the economic flood that's still likely to come.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, October 21st, 2020. ECISD to pilot SpaceX Internet by Ruth Campbell. Ector County ISD on Tuesday became the first school district in the nation to partner with SpaceX to provide broadband service to families with poor or no internet access. Superintendent Scott Murray made the announcement on a concrete slab diagonally across from Wilson's Corner near Pleasant Farms. He was joined by ECISD Board of Trustees President Dilma Abalos, Permian Strategic Partnership President and CEO Trustee Tracy Bentley, and State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican of Odessa. Starting in January 2021, 45 families will be served by Starlink. Assuming that goes well, another 90 families will be added, Murray said. The service won't cost the families anything for a year. The venture is the result of a partnership of ECISD Chiefs for Change, a national philanthropic organization, PSP, and SpaceX. The cost is $300,000, and Chiefs for Change provided $150,000. The partnership will bring SpaceX Starlink satellite technology to families in the community. After schools shut down in March due to COVID-19, a survey of families in ECISD found that 39% did not have internet access in their homes or had limited internet access. Right behind me, you are looking at the community of Pleasant Farms that has been that has very limited broadband service. We have children, we have families, we have educators living in this community, and having the internet in their home is extremely difficult, if not possible. But because of SpaceX and their Starlink technology, they are right now circling a series of satellites above this area, and they will beam a high-quality broadband signal to our families, providing high-quality, high-speed broadband access so our children can continue the learning process, Murray said. Murray said ECISD has worked diligently with the local community and state officials to explore opportunities for students, but also looking long-term. Short-term solutions are not the answer, Murray said. We need solutions that provide permanent solutions, permanent opportunities for kids not only in ECISD, but across our state and across our nation. Bentley said one of the most rewarding aspects of her job is being able to collaborate with visionary leaders. When the Permian Strategic Partnership was formed nearly 2 years ago, our internet was to look at the entire basin and identify areas in which we could make real and lasting impacts that will benefit our communities. We eventually identified some specific yet broad initiatives: safer roads, affordable housing, superior schools, a trained workforce, and quality health care, Bentley said. To address these issues, the Permian Strategic Partnership has been working in collaboration with elected officials, local leaders, community organizations, and citizens from West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. This collaboration is key to strengthening and improving the quality of life for the residents of the Permian Basin. As we continue identifying ways, we can continue to make our communities even better. It has become clear that one such focus should be connecting the Permian Basin. We all know that access to broadband is essential for the success of our region. Unfortunately, there are far too many people who lack this access. This unserved need has become especially apparent over the last few months, and it is imperative that we work together to address this, most importantly, to meet the needs of our schools and our school children, she added. Bentley added that this is a chance for the Permian Basin to demonstrate what it can accomplish when the right people are brought to the table. We are not just a leader in energy production, Bentley said. We are a leader in implementing innovative ideas to solve our most pressing needs, and I look forward to future partnerships such as this. Landgraf noted that this is a bold project poised to transform the life of about 1 million rural Texans. This is a spark that is going to spread across the state of Texas, that is going to transform lives in a very meaningful way. Because as we stand here today, there are 1 million Texans in rural parts of the state and thousands of others in the middle of urban areas who have been left on the wrong side of the digital divide. We've already talked about this morning about why broadband access is so important for health, for commerce, and for educational attainment, especially in 2020 and especially amid a pandemic, Landgraf said. He added that the project provides a blueprint for other remote areas of the state to bridge the digital divide. He added that the impact can't be underestimated. A national call is being made for federal action to end the digital divide. Our state and national leaders like Landgraf and U.S. Senator John Cornyn, Republican Texan, have taken up the torch to push for ubiquitous broadband internet for all, using Ector County ISD as a case study. Additionally, National PTA President Leslie Boggs testified before Congress about this critical need and referenced ECISD as an exemplar working to find innovative and permanent solutions, a news release said. Avalos praised Murray, his team, and the partners in the venture. I don't live very far from here, so I understand internet problems. But at least we have it. Some of these people don't have any access. This is a great project, Avalos said. One of the school board's projects is to provide equity in the forms of a high-quality education for all our students, and right now, equity is a big subject. We really are focused on equity for all of our students, and this really helps us. It is going to help us do that. I am beyond proud to know that ECISD is the first school district in the United States to use the SpaceX Starlink satellite to provide internet service for our students. It's unreal, in my opinion. It's like science fiction. So I am really excited about what's going on. We'll continue the search for innovative ways to support our students and create opportunities for them to pursue their dreams, because we truly believe that our students are the future and we have a great team leading them, she added.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.